Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for coming out today. Really appreciate your support. You guys were great last Sunday. It was awesome. And for those of you that are going to Minnesota, we'll see you there. For those of you that aren't, I know you should be cheering your hearts out back here, and we'll see you Monday. Thank you.
The Patriots got a super send-off from their fans at a rally at Gillette Stadium on Monday morning prior to the team departing from Minneapolis and Super Bowl 52. Of course, season ticket also shipped off to Minnesota with considerably less fanfare. Nevertheless, we are here now, Radio Row at Super Bowl 52, smack dab in the middle of the Mall of America food court. I'm looking at the Shake Shack. We're going to be bringing you in-depth coverage of Super Bowl 52 all week long here from Minnesota. First up, of course, we have Boston Globe columnist, Mr. Tomato Can, Dan Shaughnessy. Dan, thanks for joining us here on Season Ticket.
It's good to be here. You bring up a good point. Why wasn't there a big rally for a Season Ticket launching out of Boston? You
know, well, there should have been.
All the other podcasts, they hate us because they ain't us. We could have had a rally with Zoe and Wiggy and all that stuff. Would have been good bounce for the show here.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been really sort of fascinating here to see. So we're here. It's Monday, January 29th. Yes. Really the first full day of the fanfare that is the Super Bowl and that goes along with it. And it seems like people are just sort of streaming in. The Patriots arrive this afternoon here. The Philadelphia Eagles got here on Sunday. What's your initial take on the vibe of this Super Bowl, this Minnesota Super Bowl, and hanging out here at a mall? Does it feel like a Super Bowl to you yet?
Well, I'm looking over your shoulder, and I see Moose Mountain behind me here, and CBS is tucked into there. Can't wait to see when Jim Rome is in Moose Mountain over there.
Can we throw Jim Rome down the zip line? just see what happens?
He'd probably be doing it on his own. But, yeah, it was weird walking around yesterday looking at, you know, Alex and Ani and Chick-fil-A and Burger King and all the things. And just the notion that the Patriots Hotel is attached to all this. It is absolutely part of the mall, as is the Eagles Hotel. They're a little bit further from where we are sitting right now. This Radio Row is wedged into an area with a lot of fans and baby strollers and escalators and just the typical mall activity of Middle America here. So it feels like we've kind of gone back in time. I'm interested to see how it'll be when it gets more populated. We're here Monday morning, the first day, and people are just still arriving, and the place is still pretty tame and quiet. But I wonder if Eagle fans are going to be, you know, running around here like, you know, the Crusaders in the 11th century, you know, or if Patriot fans will get into brawls with them right
hopefully
in our eye view here. Because, I mean, if these people do come, this will be the place to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit like having the Super Bowl Media Center be at the Natick Collection or the Natick Mall,
sure,
or whatever they're calling it now. That's kind of the vibe here of this mall, and it's obviously gigantic. The implications of the Super Bowl are gigantic, I think, for the Patriots in terms of history and legacy. Brady and Belichick have won 5 Super Bowls. They're now seeking a 6th. This is their 8th Super Bowl appearance. Dan, what would it mean for these two guys and their legacy if they're able to pull this off, defeat the Philadelphia Eagles, and win a 6th Super Bowl together?
Yeah, I mean, they've pretty much dusted off the competition, all these greatest of all time arguments. Obviously, for the Patriot franchise, a 6th Lombardi Trophy ties them with Pittsburgh. That's one thing they have not accomplished. But Pittsburgh didn't do it with the same coach and quarterback for all 6. You do have that here, which makes this astounding. The notion that 13 years ago, sitting in Jacksonville talking about the Patriots winning 3 out of 4 against the Eagles, and here we are, fast forward 13 years later, same thing, chance to win 3 out of 4 against the Eagles, and it's the same coach and quarterback. I mean, that is absolutely phenomenal. Just hard to believe. You got to pinch yourself to believe that. So there's not a whole lot left to prove, but you know how these guys are. This one's there for the picking. They have a very good chance to do it, and I don't think they're going to be denied.
Yeah, it's interesting. Also, they would be the first team to repeat as Super Bowl champions since they did it in 2003 and 2004, part of that run of 3 out of 4 that you mentioned. On the flip side of this, you're right. Look, you're not going to take anything away from Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and where they stand in history. But I said this before the AFC Championship game. You win that one. It was the 12th AFC Championship game appearance. Winning 8 out of 12 looks a little different than 7-5.
Sure.
And I also think that if you win this one, 6-2 looks a little different than 5-3, especially when it's 5-3 and one of the losses is to Nick Foles, a backup quarterback. I think they get dinged a little bit if they lose this game to the Eagles with Nick Foles, who I think outside of Philadelphia, most of America has very little faith in. I mean, this guy is sort of the quintessential backup quarterback. Yes, he had a great year in 2013, the 27 touchdowns against the two interceptions. But if they lose the game to Nick Foles, I think that hurts a little bit.
Well, that is the part that I can't get my head around, is the idea that the Patriots with Tom Brady could lose the Super Bowl with Nick Foles on the other team. By the same token, the Patriots with Bill Belichick can lose to, is it Doug Peterson? Is that this guy's name?
Yes.
The coach of the Eagles?
Yes.
I mean, you know.
He's quite decorated, obviously,
whoever
as you
he
can
is,
tell.
I mean, it's just like, where's this guy been? And the track record of guys who haven't faced Belichick is almost non-existent. You can't find it. It's just like, you've got to coach a perfect game. I know that Schwartz, their coordinator, is very much in love with Belichick, owes his whole career to him.
Yeah, worked for him in Cleveland.
That's never a good sign when you worship Bill and owe your whole career to him, because he takes advantage of those guys. Shiano, just down the line there, Del Rio, all these guys who worship Bill, he takes their pants off every time they play them. So I think that, you know, I can't make a case for the Eagles to win this game. Now, it's football, things happen. But, yes, going back to your original thing, Brady, Belichick, they're not going to lose this time around.
Let me make a case for the Eagles here as we talk. You know, one of the things the Eagles have, and it's something that the Giants had when they won Super Bowl 42 and Super Bowl 46, they have a ferocious pass rush. And there's a lot of depth there to that pass rush. And they can rush from the interior. So you have Fletcher Cox, who's very good in the middle. Timmy Jernigan in the middle. The edge guys can also move to the middle and rush. Chris Long, who was with the Patriots last year when they won the Super Bowl and took down the Falcons in that historic comeback. They have Brandon Graham. They have Vinnie Curry. And they have rookie first-round pick Derek Barnett. Is there any way you look at it that they can sort of dust off that Giants game plan and just pressure Tom Brady into oblivion? And it becomes a much lower scoring game than we've expected, where the Patriots get held to 14 points or 17 points, like in those Giants Super Bowls?
Well, what you've drawn up, that's certainly the model for the Eagles to try to go at these guys. And, I mean, I guess they're capable of doing it. The packages, the personnel you've mentioned, I'm not going to dispute that. I had more faith in Eli Manning than I have in Nick Foles. And I realize those are still like 17, 13 games. They were really low-scoring games when the Patriots got up against them. But I just don't think that Foles can drive them down the field for the winning touchdown the way Manning did. I just don't see it.
You know, it's an interesting point you bring up in terms of Foles driving down the field, because he's been really, really good in the playoffs so far. He's completing 77.8% of his passes. But if you go back to the NFC Championship game against the Vikings and that big victory for the Eagles, he didn't have to take them on a lot of long drives. They got some big plays in that game. He had the long touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey. He had a long touchdown off a flea flicker to Torrey Smith. He had another touchdown where he basically just threw it up in the back of the end zone to Alshon Jeffrey. Going into that game, Minnesota had only allowed 5 pass plays of 40 yards or more all season long. They allowed 3 in that game, 2 of them for touchdowns. My point is, I don't think Foles is set up to take you on 8, 9, 10 play drives 4 or 5 times in a game and put it in the end zone. And I think that's what the Patriots are going to do. I think their game plan, they're going to say, beat us and string together 4 or 5 drives where you're accurate play after play. And I don't think he can do that.
Right. That's probably where the rubber meets the road with all this analysis, because, you know, again, it gets back to the quarterback on the other team. And with what the Patriots will make them do, they'll make him do something that he can't do.
Make him play left-handed. Yeah, that's what they like to do. They like to make him play left-handed. I wanted to get sort of a big picture thought from you here, Dan. When you look at this, you know, you are somebody who has often commented on the Patriots' quality of competition or lack thereof. If they win the Super Bowl and they go through Marcus Mariota, Blake Bortles, Nick Foles, does that take anything away from the accomplishment?
No, I mean, nobody counts who Joe Montana played all those years ago or Terry Bradshaw, but if you're watching it in real time, it's a little bit, it annoys me that I don't think they've faced the teams that can give them trouble. And again, you can only play the teams that are in front of you. So these guys beat the other guys, but I would have had more interest in seeing the Falcons with Matt Ryan, New Orleans with Drew Brees, and prior rounds, the Chiefs, the Ravens, just teams that have a coach quarterback combination that I think won't just fall down and worship these guys and just not be able to perform in front of them. So, but hey, you only can play who's in front of you. And to your point, no. When you count the championships at the end, they're not going to say, oh, really? It was Mariota and Foles and Blake Bortles? No, no one will do that.
So there's no tomato can Lombardi. Like, there's no Lombardi where they just put the tomato can on top instead of the football?
No sauce on those
gold
trophies.
They don't
do
that? Okay, I just wanted to double check.
Nope.
We have to ask you, where do the Eagles fall on the tomato can spectrum scale?
Well, if they had their quarterback, this would be a really interesting game. We could really be genuine with drumming up the interest
for
this
game.
I think we could do that. Without him, they become a beatable team that you should beat. If the Patriots don't win this game, that's on them. And they really, I even thought the Giants games that they lost in the Super Bowls, the Giants were a worthy opponent. And if the Eagles win, I guess we're going to have to say they're a worthy opponent too. I don't think they're worthy of playing the Patriots as I sit here today on Monday.
Where, if the Patriots did lose this game, and we had this discussion before, and you thought my opinion was ridiculous, where does it fall on the scale of sort of worst playoff losses of the Brady Belichick era?
Well, I mean, I still think that, you know, the 18-0 one is that gets hung on them forever because it was a perfection and
sure.
It was teed up, and the Giants are huge underdogs. Beyond that, I think, you know, this would go into the category with the Indy game against the Giants, another game that they thought they were going to win, they should have won, and they didn't. I mean, all their Super Bowls, all seven of them in this regime, 6 points or less. You can make a case they could be 7-0, they could be 0-7, all that stuff. But after the great fortune they've had in the last two against Seattle and against Atlanta, it does make me wonder if there's ever going to be any kind of a karmic equation here where some of the stuff that always goes their way goes against them.
One of the big storylines at Super Bowl 52 will be the health of Rob Gronkowski. He's still in the concussion protocol after Barry Church leveled him in the first half of the AFC Championship game against Jacksonville. He has practiced the last couple of days, Saturday and Sunday. What's your level of concern about Gronk here?
Not a lot. And again, I'm not in his head. And I think that his family would have got involved if this was really an issue, because I think they're very protective of him, as any family would be, and we've seen that in the past with him. So the two-week thing was a blessing for everybody, and we all saw that hit. It was bad. But I saw Dr. Cantu talking about it the next day. He said, oh, he'll be okay to play. I mean, he'd play this week if they had to play this week. So I'm just going by what he says, what they're demonstrating by the practice methods, and the fact that Gronk, you know, he wants to be out there because he wasn't there last year when they won. He wants to be back out there, and you only have so many of these chances. So there's no doubt in my mind he's out there, and I think he'll play well.
Yeah, and you were referencing Dr. Robert Cantu of the BU Concussion Center, sort of one of the most well-known experts on the subject. If Gronkowski for some reason can't go or is diminished, a la Super Bowl 46, when he's out there with the ankle injury and the Giants are screaming in the first possession, 87's a decoy, how much does that level the playing field?
Well, it changes a lot when they don't have him because, I mean, Tom Brady only has so many weapons, but they've been able to do things when they lose weapons. But I still go back to that Miami game. When he wasn't in that Miami game,
looked terrible.
They really noticed it. And Miami's a chippy team that tried to get him off their game. And, hey, if these guys can knock Tom off his mark, and, you know, even if they have to take some penalties and hit him late in the play, which is not a good sportsmanlike thing to do, but if you want to win the game, you got to make him uncomfortable back there. And if they can do that and he doesn't have Gronk, he can start to make a case for the Eagles to win this game.
So Rob Gronkowski's health certainly is going to be one of the primary storylines of Super Bowl 52. There's always stuff that happens Super Bowl week that has nothing to do with the game, really. Ancillary stuff that becomes a story. We already have one of those stories, Dan, and it involves Tom Brady. And we're going to get to that after this break. Welcome back. If you like season tickets, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. Well, Tom Brady had a lot to say at the Patriots send-off rally this morning.
And I know we obviously can't bring you all to Minnesota with us. Maybe some of you can come, but you guys are with us. We know that. You know that. We all know that. Patriot Nation stronger than ever. We got one more to go. We're going to go out there and try to win it for you guys. And that's all we got. We love you. Patriots out!
But he didn't have much to say in his weekly interview with WEEI. Brady was upset about some comments that were made on the station about his daughter. And I'll just say the word, you know, whatever. I mean, somebody on EEI called his daughter a pissant. Those comments came after the Tom vs. Time documentary, which you can catch on Facebook, was released. And there was a scene there with Brady's daughter. Tom Brady did not care for those comments at all, and he let WEEI know about it.
I've tried to come on this show for many years with and showed you guys a lot of respect. I've always tried to come on and, you know, do a good job for you guys. So you know, it's very disappointing when you hear that, certainly with my daughter or any child. You know, they certainly don't deserve that. So,
No question. Yeah, as I said, Jerry and I talked about it on Friday. Stupid thing to say. He was suspended for it. He should be. There are certain things I think you understand. As a professional athlete, you're going to be criticized for what you do or on or off the field as an individual. But for a kid to be criticized is unbelievably stupid. There's no defense for it.
Yeah. So I'll obviously evaluate whether I want to come on this show again. So I really don't have much to say this morning.
That's fine. I understand. So that's totally fine.
I will maybe I'll speak with you guys some other time.
Absolutely fine. We understand.
Have a good day.
All right, Tom.
Thanks.
You too.
So, Dan, here we are. Tom Brady, first day of the Super Bowl. I'm not sure he realizes it, although he might because he's Tom Brady and everything he does becomes a major story. I mean, if the guy goes to the supermarket and picks out a can of Coke after he said that stuff was poison, then it's going to be like a huge story. There's no question about that. But we have a little bit of a kerfuffle here.
Sure.
Between Brady and WEI over these comments made about his daughter, Vivian. What do you make of this, and do you think this will be a distraction?
Well, I think, you know, there's media night tonight here in Minneapolis, and Tom's going to get asked about that. And this, you know, provides the proverbial distraction that you referenced there. And it's like, who needs it? The release of Tom versus Time was bound to trigger something. You were going to get questions about that anyway, which he didn't want to answer on Saturday in Foxborough. And now this comes to light. He's had a long-standing relationship with WEEI, and it's a station that has very, let's just say, edgy program,
sure,
would be the polite way to put it.
And let's be honest, too. He does have a long-standing relationship. He gets paid to go on there. The Patriots,
yes,
have a relationship with the EI, and EI pays the Patriots to have people on, including Brady and Belichick.
Yep, and I mean, when you start getting into talking about certain things, and people's children certainly, that you would think would be off limits, the edgy takes a price there. And Tom, good for Tom this morning going on there and saying, you know what, I heard some stuff was said, not interested. I'll reevaluate if I want to keep doing this. So that sets a certain tone before he leaves Foxborough this morning. And he was pretty good in the rally down there, too, from what I saw. He was like...
He was fired up.
Throwing down microphones and drop kicking everything. And,
yeah.
So
drop
I think
the
that,
mic and drop kick WEI all in one morning.
So it, you know, it gives you a little bit of an edge coming into the day's proceedings, and you know they have availability, a lot of availability today, tomorrow, and Wednesday and Thursday. Monday. Boy, 4 days: Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's tremendous availability, more than we ever get, where they do like hours at a time. And this is going to come up for Tom repeatedly, and it's probably not the way he wanted to get his week started, but he's professional and veteran enough to handle it.
Now, you're a father and a grandfather. Can you understand his anger at this and at the derogatory term that was used to describe his daughter?
I mean, kids are off limits, and people need to just rein it in a little bit. It's very easy to get loosey-goosey behind these microphones, and we all do it at times.
Absolutely.
One time or
we've all said stupid
stuff.
So
you've got to be careful. And but for the player to be violated by this, it makes perfect sense, and it's just interesting given the long-standing relationship that he has with them. And again, it's a contractual obligation. We'll see where this goes moving forward, because it's not what he needed to start off his Super Bowl week.
No, absolutely not. And but look, it's Tom Brady sort of taking a stand there. And I think sometimes with these guys, we forget that we're dealing with, it's not a celebrity, it's a human being. And I think that that's just sort of a natural human emotion to want to protect your child and to be upset that somebody, you know, spoke of your child in an ill way. And so that's the way he approached it. And I can't say that I disagree with him at all. I mean, there's certain things that should be off limits. He's a public figure. He knows it. If he plays poorly, people are going to get on him. People make fun of him for the TB12 stuff, the TB12 method, you know, what he eats, how he trains, the pliability stuff. He gets mocked and derided for that. I don't think he likes that, but he knows it's part of the territory and he's able to block that stuff out. But you're taking it to another level when you're sort of criticizing one of his children. What's interesting about it, though, is that it would be the second straight Super Bowl where there's a Tom Brady family storyline. Obviously, the storyline last year was his mother and his mother recovering from cancer. And Tom was really emotional when he was here at the Super Bowl last year. I thought he was really reflective and expansive and sort of gave you a window into how he felt. And he portrayed himself and came off as more human, really. I mean, I thought he let us in more than he ever had last year at the Super Bowl, and that was obviously a very emotional victory for Brady and for his family and his mom, Galen, and Galen ends up with the Super Bowl ring. But it's just kind of strange that two Super Bowls in a row, you know, Tom's going to have to be answering questions about his family.
You're right. I mean, I had actually that fallen out of my memory about last year with his mom. And I think the nights Tuesday and Wednesday, we got up close with him, and he actually started crying, answering questions about his dad.
Yeah.
And that was before it came out. Some people knew, but it came out slowly that his mom had an issue and was going to be at the game. And by the end of the week, of course, everybody knew. But there was a tremendous amount of emotion for him in that game last year, because you had his mom's medical crisis coupled with the Roger Goodell suspension. And this was really his first chance to play and face the commissioner after the suspension, and to be on that stage with the trophy, and to have all the New England road trip and fans down there in the field. That had to have been one of the most satisfying moments of his life. I mean, to win that game in the fashion they did, to have your fans down there, basically all giving the commissioner the finger, and you got your mom there who looks like she's on the comeback trail. I mean, I can't imagine a whole lot of better nights in anybody's life than that.
Yeah. When you look at this, so you and I are both in agreement that Tom has every right to be indignant about the comment. But is there any part of you that looks at this, Dan, and says, okay, when you open up your life like this, when you do something like Tom versus Time, which is behind the scenes, and which is obviously, there's a promotional element to that, that you're inviting this sort of commentary. Not, and again, that doesn't make it right, but that when you do this, you're inviting somebody to make this sort of comment that they shouldn't make.
If there were any support for the other side of this, that would be the argument, the thing you just raised. But since it's Tom Brady and since it's his 5-year-old daughter, there will be no support from any other side to say, well, he kind of leaves himself wide open when he puts these videos out there and this Facebook thing, and you know he needs to be prepared for what's going to come. No, you don't go back at a 5-year-old girl, the guy's daughter. That's just off limits. That's just a universal truth. You're not allowed to do it. Leave it alone. He's right. They're wrong.
No, I completely agree with you on that one. What's your take on the whole Tom versus Time documentary? And just the idea of it, yeah. And the fact that it's coming out. Take you know, his daughter Vivian out of it, but the
sure.
fact that it's coming out during this playoff run. Episode 2 was Sunday night. Yeah. We've all seen the first episode. The timing of it, I think, is sort of set up to maximize what's happening here with him chasing a 6th Super Bowl. But it also seems like it's a ready-made distraction.
Absolutely. I mean, that part of it I'm not cool with. And, you know, good for Tom. Then the brand's really important to him, clearly. I'm amazed at how important it is to him. He's so decorated. He doesn't need this stuff. I don't know whether the notion is he's going to have TB12s around the world and just change humanity or be the Tony Robbins of athletic trainers, what he wants to be. But to me, he's great as is, and this is not helping. I think there's a level of bottom feeding that goes to the whole thing and pushing some of the products. It's very commercial. The timing of it, I think, is unfortunate. And, I'm not a fan of the whole idea of releasing it. I just don't think he needs it, but he evidently does.
Well, the thing I'll say about it, having watched it, is that I think it's good in terms of, you're a big historian, it's sort of documenting Tom Brady and what it takes,
sure.
because we only really see what happens on the field. So I think he realizes he's closer to the end than the beginning, and he's trying to document some of this stuff. And I also think it humanizes him. I mean, when you look at it, you know, there he is. He is with his family. There he is eating breakfast. I mean, it seems weird to say, but I think a lot of times with celebrities, people sort of forget they're regular people. And that's been my takeaway from the first two episodes. Look, maybe it's all a put on because they're only showing you what they want to show you. But outside of football and away from the celebrity he's cultivated, he looks like a pretty normal guy, like eating a bowl of whatever it is, quinoa oats, quinoa flakes, I don't know,
sure.
you know, at his house in the morning. And I think there's a value to that, to sort of bring him back down to that everyman level.
Right. But it also flies in the face of the first 10 years of his career where he's all about team and there's no individual stuff.
Well, he got brainwashed
with
that.
No promotion.
Don't you think that's a brainwashing
sure.
thing? I mean, you're the greatest quarterback of all time. You haven't done a lot of this promotional stuff. See, this is where I think he made a mistake. He should have been doing some of this stuff all along. Now he's trying to cram it all in at the end, and it's really sort of obvious and sort of blatant, and it agitates people because they're like, why are you always selling me something? And I think in his mind, it's sort of, well, I haven't done any of this ever, and so now as I come towards the end of my career, I want to do this. And now I have to do as much as I can. And it's just really blatant in a lot of people's
yes.
minds.
And any New England fan, Patriot fan, we all love Tom Brady. But if this were LeBron James, we would be hammering the guy for putting this thing out there.
It's a fair point. I mean, I think that the promotional aspects of Tom Brady and the things that he is promoting and pushing, it's definitely become conspicuous. I mean, you can't avoid it. And I know that agitates some people. But I think he has his own brand, and I don't have a problem with him promoting it. as long as the stuff he's promoting, there's nothing in there that's factually inaccurate, that's a misrepresentation. That's where I sort of go the other way. You know, some of the stuff with Alex Guerrero, you're selling a lifestyle and a nutrition manual and guide, and are you really going to get these results? Because as we all know, there are things that Alex Guerrero has been associated with that have proven to be completely inaccurate and false.
You and I both have warrior spirits. Do we feel the need to put it out there? No. We just let people accept it for themselves.
The Dan Shaughnessy warrior spirit?
Warrior spirit.
Is that a Diet Coke? Does that come with a Diet Coke?
It's to keep writing what you believe in the face of everyone else telling you you're stupid, you're wrong, you're a jerk.
I like that. That is the Dan Shaughnessy warrior spirit. Where does that come from, the Diet Cokes, though? You are a big Diet Coke imbiber.
It is somewhat fueled by the caffeine and the zest of
I mean, people don't know this, but, you know, I've had the pleasure and the honor of sitting next to you many times at these events, and you can really knock back those Diet Cokes.
Yes, I've tried to cut back. We're going with water this morning.
Better.
I'm listening to Tom a little bit.
Okay, yeah, all right, yeah. All right. That's very good. All right, I think that's going to wrap it up here for our first season ticket podcast from Super Bowl 52 from the lovely food court here at the Mall of America. I'm looking. Shake Shack still looks like it's closed, which is kind of disappointing.
Off to Cinnabon now.
Yes, off to Cinnabon. Yeah, we're going to have to do that. I feel like I've sort of been dropped on planet Mars here, like doing this in the middle of I feel like I'm at the Natick Mall. Like, will they ever hold the Super Bowl at the Natick Mall?
I hope not.
But anyways, this was a lot of fun, Dan. We appreciate it. We'll see you at Super Bowl opening night,
yes,
which is tonight, and throughout the rest of the week. So thanks for stopping by Season Ticket here at the Mall of America.
Thank you, Chris.
That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Chris Gasper, signing off from the Mall of America here in Bloomington, Minnesota. We'll see you tomorrow at Super Bowl 52.